Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 435.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat, reporting live from Psychotherapy Networker, and I'm so happy to be here in person with multiple time Therapy Chat guest, Dr. Leslie Korn. Thank you so much for being here with me, Leslie. It's so great to be in person.
Lord, it's a thrill.
You're so kind. You always make me feel so good, just the way you relate. You're a very relational person.
I am.
I love that about you.
Thank you.
So I want to start off with just asking you, what are you doing here at Psychotherapy Networker?
Well, yesterday I gave an all-day workshop on Creativity Day on integrative medicine and nutrition for the treatment of PTSD and complex trauma.
Awesome. I wish I could have been there. I was doing this, but I'll definitely catch the recording because, I mean, when I think of integrative health, nutrition, and like mental health all together, I always think of you. I mean,
thank you.
And you have that wonderful course.
Yes. I've
maybe a couple of courses.
I do. I've got now 3 certification courses under the rubric of integrative medicine. And you know, I'm a psychotherapist by training and have worked for over 40 years doing psychotherapy. But I discovered, really, I'm also a nutritionist and a body worker, and it's just the missing piece. Mm-hmm. We can't just talk. People have to improve their diet, improve their self-care, improve their exercise, their whole lot of things that I want people to do for themselves to really recover from trauma. So I've got a certification in this work for trauma therapy, and one for mental health in general, for the all variety of the DSM-5 categories, many of them. And then one for dementia and Alzheimer's.
Really?
And diabetes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they run it from 20 to 30 hours. Then after that, we do live case consultations so that you get a lot of the knowledge base under your belt, but now you have to apply it with your clients and figure out, how do I integrate this work into my existing practice? And then that's what I need.
Yeah, that's excellent, because I know I bought your, I think it was your first integrative nutrition and mental health certification, like maybe 6 years
yes,
ago, maybe around 2017 or 2018.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So much information. I mean, it was like encyclopedic to me. Of course, maybe there's a lot more that you could have put into it that I would have no way of knowing, but I was like, I can't believe how much you packed into that course. And I think that when I hear about the opportunity for consultation afterwards, it's how you really integrate
what you're learning, you know, through the material. So, but now I both have to get both of those others because, you know, trauma is my focus. And, you know, I always want things that are very specific to trauma, but.
And trauma is my focus too.
Yeah.
And don't you think that with rare exception, trauma underlies
100%
all mental and physical distress. And I think that's one of my main goals is to educate therapists that the physical forms of distress that we're seeing, the digestive problems, the IBS, the headaches, the autoimmune disorders, chronic pain, the addictions, these are all rooted also in trauma. And yet, as psychotherapists, we don't always understand them or know what it means or how to help our clients integrate a program and a plan of care so that they recover from those forms of distress and symptoms also.
I could not agree with you more. And I'm always like about to burst into tears, but I'm feeling so much about what you're saying because some of my family members have, you know, one has this long standing, like, I don't know if it's mast cell activation or what it is. That person has a severe trauma history. Another person I love has diabetes and it's not, well, I believe it is from childhood trauma, but they think, you know, it's just like a disease you get or you don't get, you know, but I think it's not type 2. I think it's type 1, but they didn't have it in childhood. I don't know. I don't quite understand. And maybe you could explain about that. Why don't we just, but then I have other family members who have dementia and I'm thinking about that too. So let me just ask you, will you give a little bit more, like expand on what you were saying about those topics?
Sure. And I really agree with you. And I think your sense of the etiology of these diseases, being out of ease, disorders, being out of order, is absolutely true. The risk factor for all of these diseases is very high if you've had childhood trauma. Because childhood trauma, as you well know, dysregulates every system in the body. It dysregulates the hypothalamic pituitary axis, our stress management system in the body that helps us calibrate and rise to the occasion when we need to, but then settle down when we can rest. And it often stays overly activated. It disrupts our immune function. So in the same way that we become hypervigilant in response to the traumatic events, always on guard, always looking out for danger, rarely being able to settle down into our skin, that's what happens to the immune system, where it starts to see danger everywhere, so much so that it can start to attack itself. That's the autoimmune disease that evolves, that we see high rates of Hashimoto's and lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. So we get this both overactivation and underactivation biologically as an analogy to just what we see emotionally that we're treating when we're doing trauma treatment. But in addition to that, the experience of particularly childhood trauma often leads to the challenges of self-care.
Yeah.
And the challenges of maybe you didn't have a role model for taking care of yourself, so it's not anything you ever learned, or the sense of helplessness to make change in one's life. And so added to that then is often a lifetime of exposure to poor quality foods, or maybe there's food insecurity, there can be poverty, and poverty is a trauma as well.
Oh, yeah.
And trauma is a social justice issue. So we've got piles upon piles of what I call stressor exposures that then really disrupt this physical being that houses our spirit and our self, our personality, so that by the time, maybe by 10 or 15 or 20, maybe we're lucky to make it to 40 before we hit the ball. And we've got not only depression and anxiety and insomnia and, you know, everything that we know, mood lability with trauma, but we've got these chronic illnesses like diabetes, like IBS, like GERD, acid reflux, headaches. And then we're going to physicians or nurse practitioners who are giving us pills to medicate. Doesn't get at the root cause, doesn't get at the trauma, doesn't get at the dysregulation of the body. It just covers over the symptoms.
Yeah.
And then you have reactions to the medications. So then you need to take more pills.
Yeah.
And then you've got side effects, and on the cycle goes.
And still the childhood trauma isn't being addressed. So the effects are still there under the surface, and you're not, it's not lessening over time.
No.
Effects are increasing over time.
That's right. Because as we age, usually things progress. And particularly as we age, hormones come into the picture, which is when both women and men tend to hit the wall. Once hormones plummet, then all hell breaks loose on the physical side and the emotional side. Insomnia gets worse. Depression gets worse. Fatigue gets worse. Because also the physical effects of trauma lead to, we know now, changes in the mitochondria. Our energy little engines, our energy engines in the body are affected. And a lot of the psychotropics depress mitochondrial respiration. So we've got, as you can see, a whole panoply of effects. It's like a big, what I call a big garbage pail of symptoms. And the biggest problem, and that's where the word integrative comes in, is that no one is helping our clients understand the whole picture. Very few people are trained in the whole picture. So you go to this GI specialist or this psychotherapist, and you get a piece of the puzzle, but what we really need is to put the whole puzzle together.
Oh, so true. And I don't know if I ever told you this, because I don't, either if it wasn't happening when I talked to you, or it was happening and I didn't want to talk about it because I was so overwhelmed. I had a health crisis it really started in 2015. It was like my dog died in the summer. Then my oldest child went to college at the end of the summer. And I feel like now what happened was my attachment system just blew up because I had like childhood attachment ruptures. And when my oldest child went to college, it just was like right there. But I didn't feel it in that way. I didn't feel like, oh, my childhood trauma is getting activated by my child going to college. I felt it as, why am I so exhausted all of a sudden? I can't get out of bed. I don't want to be depressed. You know, the only answer is depressed. You can't get out of bed, you're depressed. I was so fatigued. I just had no energy. Then I started having all these hormonal issues. And I was like 42. And it just was like one day I was okay. And the next day I was like really bad off. And it took me 4 years of trying to figure out what was wrong, blaming myself, feeling shame about not feeling okay, trying to push through, always trying to push through and be okay. And I looked at my family and I was like, wow, hysterectomy at 43, cervical cancer at 43, and also had a hysterectomy, got diabetes at 43. And it's like, what's going on here? And so you could look at that and say, oh, well, there's a family history of at 43, where bodies go haywire. That doesn't really make sense. Because if you look at it, we all also have childhood trauma.
Right.
And it's like people don't realize how these things are connected. People just live with these IBS symptoms, you know, feeling nauseous every day. You know, I didn't have these symptoms, but, you know, I hear it from clients all the time having, you know, they have reflux, they have heartburn, they have, you know, and they're taking all these different medications every day for them. And if it doesn't get addressed, and then later, like, dementia comes around and you can see, I can see that it's still related to childhood trauma. And it's like,
we have to get these connections for our well-being, our wellness as a population. You know, it's just so harmful that the way that our health is approached in the Western world is like, you know, you have a headache, take a pill to make the headache go away instead of wondering why you're having a headache. And I think that sometimes these symptoms are so debilitating, all of the symptoms that I mentioned, that you can't even like see what to do or where to go because you're just so, you know, you've got brain fog, you're exhausted. And now adding the effects of COVID and long COVID.
Right.
Oh, it's just, but you know, the idea that, and I feel like I only really learned this from you, which is kind of ridiculous, but the idea that what you put in your body does affect, you know, everything that's going on inside, but we don't, like culturally, we just don't.
No, we don't teach it.
Do that,
We teach the opposite. I call it social dissociation.
In trauma,
we treat dissociativity. We think about, come into your body, live in your body, it's safe, you know, claim your body, tolerate the sensations. But I think there's a kind of social dissociation where we're fed information that does not support the fact that our body's talking to us, we can listen. And you made such an important point that when we do suffer the way that you did suffer, we blame ourselves, we feel shame. And it's really because there's no one helping us put the pieces of the puzzle together and say, you know, this does go back to your traumatic events, that you're amazing that you survived and you made it, and you have a career, you have a family, you have animals, you have life, and yet your body is soldiering through, trying the best it can to measure up and show its biological resilience. We talk about emotional resilience, but I want to talk about supporting the biological resilience, the channel for our emotional. The analogy I use is we drive a car and we need to fuel that car correctly. Otherwise, it'll sit and sputter or rust out, or like, what are we fueling our car with, our engine with? And so what you defined is, yes, we hit these points in our life where it's like we get hit by a 2x4.
Yeah.
The loss of your dog, the empty nest. And that 2x4 is just the final knockdown. It's like the body says, I can't take this anymore. I have been there for you.
I was trying to tell you.
I've had enough.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to perform for you anymore. And you're going to bed until you figure it out.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it as your body's trying to help you and saying, stay in bed. You need to rest. But in our culture of consumerism and productivity and capitalism, everything has to be commodified. And if you're not working, you can't survive.
Right.
You know, it's like, you feel this need to rest, and that is pathologized.
Right. And no one has given you actionable information. No one's saying, you know, Laura, you've worked hard and you're worn out. It's like you've been, let's go back to that car analogy. You're sitting in park, but your car is going and your foot's on the pedal.
Yeah.
Running the engine.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, that engine's burned out. And physically, that's what happens to us. Our hypothalamic in the brain, adrenal, right above the kidneys, our adrenal glands, which give us our cortisol, give us our get up and go, give us our energy in the morning, and then rise to the highest in the normal state in the morning, and then start to lower throughout the day until they're lowest in the evening when we go to sleep. But in trauma, we have a completely dysregulated cortisol cycle so that the adrenals are tired. That's why we wake up in the morning. We're tired. We can't get out of bed. We go, oh, I can't get going unless I have a few cups of coffee or some sugar. Oh, now I can get it through the day. And then we're finally revved up and going. And by night, the cortisol is high. Then we can't fall asleep. And then we take a medicine, Ambien or Benzo, to fall asleep. And then we begin the cycle the next day. And then that lays the groundwork for fibromyalgia. That's actually what we call biological depression. Biological depression is that cycle of dysregulated cortisol where it's the opposite of what it should be. And that cycle should be high in the morning, high stress hormone in the morning to get up and go, and low at night. And that follows, is our circadian rhythm that follows the sleep-wake cycle and the light-dark cycle. So as biological beings, as animals, we are supposed to get up when it's light and go to bed when it's dark. That's what we're attuned to. That's what our brain responds to, light and dark. And we ignore it routinely. Who goes to sleep when it gets dark?
No one. It's like you think of a farmer. They get up really early in the morning and then go to bed when it's dark. But that's because they're up at like 4 a.m. But yeah, you're right.
And that sets the stage for illness. It sets the stage for mental illness. We know bipolar, and I call, you know, while there's true bipolar out there, a lot of, I call it the diagnosis du jour, because it's routinely misdiagnosed when people should be diagnosed with trauma, should be diagnosed with complex trauma, the mood lability that gets misdiagnosed, but that's truly a circadian rhythm disorder, or ODD, another specious diagnosis, which really comes out of chronic stress exposure in childhood. Even we could say,
did y'all hear that? ODD. Did you hear that? ODD is a specious diagnosis that comes from chronic stress in childhood. Oppositional defiant disorder is not real. Okay. Thank you.
When we know that when we treat the trauma, the symptoms can resolve.
Yes.
But we're missing the trauma treatment oftentimes. And on top of that, we're missing supporting the biological self. And we can't blame therapists because we're not training therapists for that until we are, as a postgraduate program. But to me, it's the missing piece in trauma treatment. And it's the piece that gets us further down the road with efficacy, with results.
Well, I'm convinced. But I have a, this is going back to something you said like probably 10 minutes ago. So I know you'll know the answer, but you said something about, I think you said psychotropic drugs do something to the mitochondrial.
They suppress
something.
Mitochondrial respiration.
A little more respiration.
The mitochondria are little organelles that generate energy for us. I love the, remember that old childhood book, The Little Engine That Could Chug Up the Mountain? Those were our little mitochondria giving us energy. And we know that psychotropic medicines, they breathe. They breathe for us, and we then breathe. And psychotropic medicines suppress mitochondrial respiration. It's the analogy I use is it's like we're helping our clients climb the hill of trauma recovery, and then we're putting a boulder on their back, making it even harder.
So when you're talking about psychotropic drugs, are you talking about like SSRIs?
SSRIs, the antipsychotics. The atypical antipsychotics, disrupt our metabolic function and disrupt libido, have marginal efficacy. So my approach, my work is helping people stay off or get off psychotropics and say, Mother Nature can do it better. Yeah. We are of the natural world. We don't need to take a hammer to our brain. We've experienced trauma. Okay, let's find our regulation again through our breathing, through our exercise, through Mother Nature's nutrition, through good food, not through packages with chemicals that excite our neurotransmitters and make us bounce off the wall or depress us or keep us awake, or whatever it is they do, or make us gain weight and suppress our libido, whatever it is. let's get off the aspartame, which disrupts mood lability. Let's get off the sugar, which is pro-inflammatory. 70% of people with chronic pain have histories of trauma. Depression is an inflammatory disorder. It's not a disorder of low serotonin. Pain is an inflammatory disorder. And what we're doing with the SAD diet, the standard American diet, is eating these pro-inflammatory foods that just exacerbate inflammation, exacerbate depression and discomfort. And then we take our NSAIDs, our non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which tear up our gut or make it hard for our liver function. Research suggests it makes us more vulnerable to dementia. The cycle goes on.
Yes,
and so we're looking at multiple system effects of these psychotropics, the mitochondria, our endocrine system, our neurotransmitter system, our gut function. We know that our mood chemicals are made in our gut, not in our second brain, not our first brain up here, by and large. So let's tend the garden of our gut and support those chemicals naturally. We are meant to be healthy, happy humans. Let's find our way back there.
Isn't our immune system in our gut too?
You bet it is. And then we have a whole endocannabinoid system, a system-wide immune function and mood functioning system. And we're familiar with it from the word cannabinoid, cannabis. And we've got in the natural world, plants like cannabis and hops, which target the cannabinoids in our brain that help us regulate pain and regulate mood. And we also have, we can have overuse of the endogenous cannabinoids, but I think we have a growing use of medical application of these cannabinoids. And we know that PTSD and trauma disrupts this endocannabinoid system as well, which often leads to, it's why we see very high rates of cannabis use among people with PTSD, but we also see high rates of use with IBS and chronic pain as well.
Yeah, I think that we are seeing high rates of use of cannabis. It's like everyone.
With everyone.
Uses it, yes. You know?
Yes.
And I mean, and then there's so much controversy about, is it a medicine or is it something that causes psychosis? I hear so much in medicine about cannabis causing psychosis.
Well, I look to the work of Dr. Ethan Russo, who's been a real pioneer. He's a neurologist who pioneered the use, by the way, speaking of your family, for the use of cannabis for migraines. And he's done stellar research, and he actually coined a concept called endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome, which suggests that we come into the world with a certain amount of tone to that spots. Our system, our endocannabinoid system, which makes us perhaps more vulnerable, more or less, to needing to fill up those little synapses with cannabinoids. But I think if we're going to talk about cannabis, I think it applies. I think what we might say about cannabis applies to everything. Everything has the potential to be a medicine, but it also has a potential to be poison. Sugar is a poison, but it's not a poison if you have it every once in a while. It is if you have it every day. And it's the same with cannabis. Cannabis is provided in the natural world with different ratios of its active substances that elevate mood or depress mood or help us sleep or reduce inflammatory process. When I've talked to Dr. Russo about this question of psychosis, he would assert that cannabis does not cause psychosis. That cannabis, if I'm paraphrasing him correctly, can trigger in people already going to convert in the late teens or early 20s into psychosis. It can hasten it. I think we can see acute psychotic reactions, or what we call acute psychosis. I had a case like this recently, in response to a very high dose, very high THC level, which is the psychoactive component in particular of cannabis. And we can see a trigger effect for an acute psychotic reaction that can resolve and isn't a true psychosis. So I think we've got a spectrum of responses. I think what it comes down to is using any medicine judiciously and not using street medicines.
Right.
But understanding the pharmacology of anything that we're using. Gluten can, well, I'm not sure gluten can be a medicine, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily harmful to some people, but many people have gluten-mediated opiate reactions in the brain, which causes a gluten and therefore often bread or glutinous substance addiction. We know through research that's quite substantive that 50% of people with psychotic disorder are sensitive to gluten, and gluten's a precipitating cause. So perhaps even more so than cannabis, we should be more worried about gluten as a cause of psychosis. And
the Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy. Sometimes it's the small actions we take that make big differences in our lives. Noticing glimmers can make such a change in my mood to say, what else is here? And I can always notice other things that give me that little positive spark in my life, and they kind of stitch together in the day to change my whole outlook. One small change that has big benefits is taking care of your gut health to support whole body well-being. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I like taking Seed because it's portable, it doesn't have to be refrigerated, it's easy to incorporate into my daily routine, and it makes me feel better just knowing I'm taking it. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living. Code 25LIVING.
What's interesting is we've known for thousands of years that gluten can cause mental illness. It's not a new idea. But in during World War II, there was a dearth of bread in Great Britain. But to everyone's pleasant surprise, the result was that many people who were in what were called the insane asylum at the time for psychotic disorders, or what we call that now, were gluten sensitive. And many of them just got better because they were no longer serving bread and glutinous mush for breakfast. So one of the first things to do, and we know the connection between psychotic disorder, many people's psychotic disorder also have a history of childhood trauma. And there's a lot of misdiagnosis. We saw that before Dr. Herman's work, naming complex trauma many women in particular who were survivors of abuse were put in institutions called psychotic when really they were showing symptoms of complex trauma. So I think we've come a long way, but we have a lot further to go in understanding the effects of foods and chemicals and drugs on mental health.
Wow. You are so knowledgeable about this, and I knew that, but it's just so, like, so powerful to talk to you about it. And gluten and casein were things that I was found to be intolerant to once I finally got to an integrative medicine doctor. And, you know, and one of the things I didn't mention about what I was going through with my health is that I gained like 50 pounds. And I was, at the time, I was working out. I was eating the same and working out the same, but I suddenly gained all this weight. And, you know, I think another thing about health is in our culture, we have both this idea that when people are overweight, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, we have this whole, you know, foods that are available are highly inflammatory foods. And so, you know, you see people go from one body type to a suddenly very bloated belly, mm-hmm. which is what I had. I had never, I'm a curvy person, but I had never gained weight that way. Mm-hmm. And you see people like that and, you know, people will say, oh, well, that person's, you know, not taking good care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, maybe just like me, they're having that mid 40s just hit the wall mm-hmm. and their body said, ah, that's what mine did.
That's a clinical term, by
clinically,
the way.
That's what it did. Oh, it's so helpful for you to explain all of this, though. And I mean, this is just like scratching the surface of all that you know and teach about these subjects and your books. You have so many books on these topics. I mean, I'm so grateful for what you do. Gosh, I want people to hear about it and really like understand these connections, because I don't understand why we just, even at this point in time, when we all know these facts, like the research knows this information.
Yes, we do. There's not a lot of support for people. And I think what's so important also is just how, as psychotherapists, we went through psychotherapy and many, many rounds of it. For example, if we're trauma survivors, as I am,
I'm so
well.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong healing process. We may try different methods and different interventions, but we don't always support people in other aspects of self-care.
Yeah.
And the integrative piece for this is that, first and foremost, as therapists, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to pace ourselves. We are doing difficult work, holding space, listening to challenging stories. And we want to be role models. I believe in being a role model for my clients and walking the path with them of self-care and being able to nourish oneself. When we think about emotional nourishment, but we need all kinds of nourishment to deeply nourish ourselves so that we can carry on this work as wounded healers, as learning as we go along and walking the path with our clients. And I think there's just too little support for that in our training programs.
Mm-hmm.
When I travel the country and teach, I see people sitting with Diet Pepsis or Coca-Colas. People come into my office and say, why didn't I know that this approach existed? So I think it's about education. I think it's psychoeducation. I think it's about awareness and changing the narrative and providing support for people. And also making these approaches more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to a group called Integrative Medicine for the Underserved. I think our work has to be rooted in social justice. It has to be rooted in accessibility. It can't be about privilege. We have to do pro bono work, donate. I'm in public health by training and by disposition. And I think we have to be creative about expanding our networks for making this approach accessible and recognizing that this work is rooted in indigenous cultures and in cultural traditions. It's why when I begin working with every client, like I could imagine you, your people go back to that beautiful country called Ireland. Mm-hmm. And what did your people eat? Your people survived on salmon and seaweed.
And my favorite food.
That's what your genes mm-hmm. are nourished by.
That's so true.
And so understanding our cultural heritage, understanding that unless we're indigenous to this land, we all come from somewhere where our genes are nourished by the foods of that land. And we have to claim cultural identity in order to be culturally savvy mm-hmm. with culturally diverse clients. So it goes back to this, it begins with us.
Yeah.
We have to do it as therapists in order to then guide our clients along the path.
Well, that's so true. That's so true. And we can do it.
We are doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it. And there's so much. I mean, you've made this information so accessible and like put it all together. You know, that's what's so amazing about what you do. You know, I mean.
Well, I called it, over time it evolved into 17 different methods that I call the Brainbow Blueprint. And it began because no one cared about me saying, go eat this vitamin or that. I said, go pick out vegetables and fruits and foods that represent the colors of the rainbow, because all of those colors represent different kinds of nutrients that nourish us. And so then the rainbow turned into the brainbow, because we're nourishing that engine, that brain of ours, so that we can give it what it needs, the good quality fats and the carbohydrates and the proteins for the amino acids. And from there, it evolved into these 17 different approaches that can be integrated in any way someone wishes, in any pace that they wish.
So how do you teach those 17 different methods? Is that all in your integrated courses? Or
the courses teach each method as it applies to the symptoms that people have. So in the trauma course, I teach about all types of trauma, particularly the interpersonal, the ACEs, and how it affects physical health. Because I think in mental health, we need to be well-versed in the physical. And I teach the physical clinicians about the mental, because we've just got too much compartmentalization in our healthcare system. The more we can put the pieces of the puzzle together, the more it makes sense and we've got a coherent narrative. And so I begin with bioindividuality. Your people are from Ireland. You are going to do well on salmon. You're not going to do well eating a vegan diet. Your people and your genes evolved in a climate that was cool and moist and around the sea, and you had carbs, you had proteins, you had foods from the sea, and that's going to be a very mixed diet. For you to go on an extreme diet is not going to serve you any more than it does my Inuit patient who evolved even further north of Ireland in Greenland, eating whale blubber and very few carbohydrates, maybe some berries during the summer months. For them to eat soy food or wheat or pig is anathema to their genetic background. And so for them to eat in their bioindividual way that nourishes their body is going to nourish their mind as well. So that's where we begin, representing our diversity and understanding that there's no one right diet for everyone. There's no fad to follow. There's no keto this or vegetarian that. That's where it fails. Just like in psychotherapy, we tailor our work. Mm-hmm. And from there, I teach an integrative assessment, how to put the pieces of the puzzle together, how to understand when a client is sitting with us and they say, I don't have a history of trauma, but that they report several types of elective surgeries. They've had numerous cosmetic surgeries, liposuction, bariatric surgery. That's a red flag that goes off because we know the high correlation between elective surgeries and history of childhood sexual abuse.
Wow.
So just like we get these hints out of our assessment, even if the client isn't ready to talk about it, we begin to walk that path of saying there may be some trauma history.
Yeah, I tell myself, what I call that like a working theory that I just keep in the back of my mind and don't necessarily have to say, oh, yes, you do have trauma. I wouldn't, negate someone's experience of their own life, but I'm just listening for maybe they don't realize that this could indicate that.
That's
right. And then as things unfold, more pieces begin to build and you say, I'm seeing a kind of a picture here, but.
Yes. And so by adding in the physical piece, and I in my talk yesterday, I shared, because I could see people saying, but I don't understand physical anatomy. I said, well, we didn't understand what we were doing when we did our first intake during our practicum, did we? No, we had studied it and then we figured it out.
Yeah.
Hopefully we did no harm, but we learn by doing. We study and we learn and we sit with our clients and we help them put pieces together and make sense of it with them. And so from there, we look at digestion. I promise you, any client with mental distress has digestive distress. I promise you that. Wherever it is, it could be GERD, it could be stomach ulcer, it could be bloating and gas, it could be
constipation,
diarrhea, it could be anal retentive. I mean, it could be anything, hemorrhoids. Somewhere along the way, because poor digestion exacerbates mental illness, it can contribute mightily to mental distress. But therefore, if we improve digestion, we improve mental health. We get that extra percentage of improvement. So with what we're doing in post-trauma therapy, if you can improve digestion, you get 10, 20, 30, 40% improvement. If you can improve diet, you get that percentage of improvement. So that's where you get that whole life improvement, not just a little bit of improvement where you're feeling better, but you're still having to take drugs or to manage every day.
Yeah, you still physically feel gross, but you at least feel emotionally a little
like
better.
You can cope better. But why not go for the optimal? Yeah. Why not do it all?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And it's now accessible. So I think
it is. So we incorporate
time.
Nature, the role of nature. We incorporate the role of nutrition and nutrients because diet's essential, but it's not enough. You can't go head-to-head with a benzo addiction by just taking, eating oatmeal in the morning. You have to really give the brain a substitution. And I have a concept called the principle of substitutions. You don't have to give up your sweet tooth. You could find alternative healthy sweetness in your life. You're better off eating raw honey or maple syrup or stevia or another, making a sweet juice out of soaking dried fruit. So you're improving the quality of the food. It's not that you have to give up your hot dogs and sauerkraut, but you're getting fresh sauerkraut at the farmer's market. You're having dye-free or additive-free hot dog or a real beef hot dog. So you're slowly improving quality and eliminating these environmental stressors that are toxins to the brain that I think underlie many, many symptoms that people have that they're unaware of. For example, Joan was post-divorce, menopausal, depressed, not eating well. She was drinking a lot of coffee. She had stomach aches. She was using creamer and artificial sweetener, eating Danish for breakfast. I said, Joan, would you like to have real cream instead of creamer? Oh, yes. Could I do that? Why not? this creamer is full of crap. Okay. I said, and how about a little honey to sweeten your coffee instead of this artificial sweetener? Oh, I could do that. So right away, we weren't saying, don't do this and don't do that. How about a substitution? You can still satisfy. Said, Joan, I think you'd feel better. Do you like eggs? Could you have an egg for breakfast? And let's find you a nice chocolate smoothie, a kind of a chocolate mocha smoothie. I created a matcha mocha smoothie, which is full of green tea and a little bit of espresso and chocolate with a little bit of honey as a mid-morning pick-me-up. She worked in an office and her energy was plummeting by 10 a.m. And so she was adrenally stressed. She had been gone through lots of trauma, and then the divorce was the final trigger. And so we just found some adjustments in her diet that gave her a little bit more protein, a little bit more energy, still satisfied what she wanted to do, and added in a little bit more protein at her lunchtime, decreased the sugar in her life. And over time, she got off her psychotropic medication. She began exercising again. And she actually became an educator in her office, where she started teaching what she was learning. I said, Joan, how about not eating that French dressing at lunchtime? Would you like a real healthy, delicious dressing for your salad? She said, oh, I'd love to do that. Mm-hmm. So I gave her a recipe I called the Brain Boost dressing, with olive oil and hemp oil and flaxseed oil and apple cider vinegar. I said, just keep it in your office fridge and take it out with you if you're going out for lunch, and just pour it on your salad there. She said, oh, I can do that. That's easy. So sometimes we're helping people just make small changes to begin with that don't feel too overwhelming or too radical, but bring about big change when you eliminate some of the really dangerous, toxic foods to our brain and our arteries.
Huh? Well, I must say, since the first time I talked to you and I got your, I think it's called Eat
Right, Feel Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I think differently about the foods I make. You know, when I prepare foods at home, I think about the oils and I think about the making my own salad dressing instead of buying a bottled salad dressing. And it feels better to me. It just feels like, I feel like what I'm eating is more nutritional. It's not about restricting anything. It's not about, you know, diet for weight loss or anything. It's just, it feels like, oh, when I eat this olive oil, like I'm adding, this isn't just an oil to make my food not stick to the pan. This is a healthy fat that I'm adding to, you know, when I eat an avocado, I think about the healthy fats, and it just makes me feel, it's not just in my mind. It's a whole body experience of just feeling like this food feels very wholesome.
Food is medicine.
Nourishing. Yeah, it really does.
And the kitchen is our pharmacy. Mm-hmm. Our use of spices and herbs and, as you say, nature's oils, olive oil, not synthetic oils.
Right.
Which are so damaging to us. So it does begin with awareness, as you say, and then we feel it at the sensory level. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back to where we began around social dissociation. There's so much trauma that we often don't live in our bodies and feel our bodies. And there's so much inundation of these powerful tastes and overwhelming sensory experiences that we don't experience the true nature of, let's say, what a celery really tastes like, as opposed to some heavily salt-laden burger that we might buy at a fast food place. So it's getting back to our essence and our ability to really use our senses as they truly exist and not overwhelm them.
Yeah. And well, you've shown me that it's possible to make small changes that just become new habits that, you know, like we always put pepper on our arugula. And my husband makes sure when we have arugula, it's that fresh ground pepper. It's just,
and so good for your liver and gallbladder, arugula. Oh, the best food there is. Your liver is so happy.
Oh, good. And I eat my salmon. I love my salmon.
Oh, yes. Yum. When's, what time's dinner?
I know. Like, what are we lunch today? Well, I always love talking to you, and we could certainly spend hours, but I know you have other things to do, including a plane to catch. But if we can take a minute for these last two questions
Sure.
that Pessy wanted us to discuss. First question is, what advice do you have for new therapists?
Oh, we could talk for a long time about this, but I think self-care is essential. I think we should be exercising every day. I think we need to build muscle. There's great research that shows that the more muscle we have, the happier we are. So I've got a whole new series coming out on muscle and mental health. So I think we have to take at least an hour a day doing exercise. And that's part of our self-care routine as therapists, because we're often sedentary. Unless Yeah. we're doing walking therapy, we're sitting.
Yep.
And we've got to move. We have to get off the sugar. There are very few no's. There are very few no-nos or absolutes in this approach. It doesn't mean we can't have an occasional birthday cake. That's not what does us in. It's sugar every day. So stop the self-medicating in order to help others. Because many of us, we talked about being wounded healers. We come to this work because we have healed ourselves to the degree that we're now ready to channel that and help others. We want to help others as service in the world, but we have to continue to help ourselves. We have to continue to heal ourselves and not engage in those traumatic memories of self-abnegation or sacrifice or no lack of self-care in the process of helping others. That suggests the lack of resolution.
Yeah.
And I suggest that we take a long, hard look at self-care for new therapists.
That's a great, great point. And I just want to say that I think that the pandemic also, you know, a lot of us were doing okay or well, and that took a lot of people down out of, you know, they may have been doing a lot of healthy habits, and then all of a sudden, all that went out the window, you know, because we were having trauma reactions just like our clients.
And still, I still see the effects, and we see the effects in long COVID among many too, for which there are a lot of good natural and integrative approaches as well. So again, intensive self-care to recover from the pandemic, that's the antidote.
Yeah. I wish I could ask you about that. We'll have to talk about that another
time.
Maybe I'll have you on when we're not here again. But okay, second question is, what are the signs that someone should go to therapy?
Oh, you know, the funniest thing is I'm heading up to Boston where I'm from, and I'm from a town outside of Boston that's known for being having the highest per capita number of psychotherapists of anywhere in the world.
Wow.
So the joke is if you're not in therapy, there's something wrong with you. So I think everybody should be in therapy. Everybody should go to therapy and maybe several rounds of therapy. But I think the signs are, there are so many signs, both physically and emotionally. I think we have an epidemic of insomnia.
Yeah. And people just say, oh, no, I only sleep 3 hours a night. I'm fine, though.
We have an epidemic of digestive problems. I'm seeing more young people all the time with digestive problems. And I think a lot of it's rooted in autonomic dysregulation. Mm. So, and I think any time, even the question of, should I see a therapist, should send us to therapy. And the question is, I don't want to see a therapist, should send us
That's
to therapy.
True. That's a sign. I don't need therapy. If you're saying that, that's a sign that, why? Methinks that us protest too much. What's the big deal?
So bottom line is everybody should be in therapy most of the time.
I agree. I mean, I will say in our world, especially the Western world, this system is not meant for human it's to thrive. It's meant for people to produce and create opportunities for those in power to have more power. So, you know, not to be like countercultural, but
that's a whole other conversation about how capitalism drives mental illness.
Yeah.
And the inequity. Then that, and I think it's important for therapists. So back to new therapists. New therapists also need training and to incorporate a social justice lens, that the one-on-one or the couples therapy, that distress is rooted in our social and political structures that promulgate inequality. And I know we don't have time for that discussion, but I think it's essential that it takes the onus, it takes the healing off the individual or off the family. It has to be a community effort to heal and to restore our sense of equilibrium. And that's rooted in a social justice lens. So I'm so thrilled that you brought that up.
Oh, well, thank you. I think collective liberation is really a theme that's being discussed here that I'm hearing. I haven't been able to hear any of the talks yet, but I'm hearing people talking about the talks. And, you know, when I heal, you heal, we heal, you know, and we need to do it for all of us. That's, I think, another reason why everyone should go to therapy. And of course, as you know very well, and I know you lived in Mexico, you know, therapy isn't the only way, but whatever healing work you're doing, whatever path you're doing to be finding wellness, you know, is everyone needs it.
Well, and you bring up an important point. One of the benefits of the work that I do and that I teach to clinicians, which is the portal into the body and into the life of the body and the health of the body, is that there remains a lot of stigma about psychotherapy across cultures. Yeah. And to be able to speak the language of people who are arriving in the United States from other cultures, for whom therapy is, where there's either a stigma or it is an unknown, to be able to talk about foods from other cultures, herbs, your healing traditions is part of this as well. To talk about physical symptoms as a channel to reach the emotional distress that's part and parcel of that gives us more skills. It gives us more tools to reach a diverse audience, to speak other people's languages of distress. And I think that's essential for us as well, as new therapists, as well as ancient therapists.
Well, Leslie, thank you so, so much for sharing your time here to do this interview and,
my pleasure.
And all the wisdom that you shared. And, you know, that's just, like I said, scratching the surface. That's the tip of the iceberg. She's got so much information and so much to teach, and it's so accessible. So I'm really grateful for everything you do. Tell us where people can find you.
People can Google my name, Dr. Leslie Korn, and they'll find a website, and it's also translated by hand into Spanish.
Nice.
So everything's accessible in English and Spanish, and I've got lots of blogs and writing, and you'll find my books there and courses there. And you have a way to contact me if people want to work with me in training or mentorship or even for health.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure. Always, Laura. Now, just tell me what time to be for dinner.
No kidding.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system, available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives, and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.